from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to the Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of this year's International Violin Competition.
I'll take a look at the Actors Theater of Indiana's upcoming season.
And I'll find out how Big Car is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Every 4 years, music lovers from all parts of the globe focus their attention on the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis, also known as just the Indianapolis. Travis DiNicola spoke with Executive Director Glenn Kwok to find out why it is regarded as one of the most respected music competitions in the world.
Glenn, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
And I appreciate you coming in right before the 9th quadrennial competition starts up. I know you're a little busy right now.
Just a tad, but I always say to people, this is what we work 4 years for. This is an exciting time for us, and we're so happy to share it with the community.
What a cool project to be a part of. I know this is your fourth one. This is, as I said, the 9th time that this has happened. Give me a little background just on what the Indianapolis, as it's nicknamed, is. This is a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal. In fact, we started our first competition in 1982 when we approached the famous pedagogue, legendary violinist Joseph Gingell at Indiana University. He was a professor there, and we asked him, would you be willing to help us create one of the world's great violin competitions on the scale of those that had existed in Europe already for three decades to that point? And Mr. Gingell, in short, was ecstatic by this offer, because he had served on the juries of all those competitions in Moscow, the Tchaikovsky competition, the Queen Elizabeth in Brussels. And he said, wow, for me to be able to be part of something right here in my home state, this would be a dream. And so 1982, we launched it. We've held it every 4 years since. The community has been so supportive. And fast forward, after 30 plus years, the Indianapolis now has become a role model for competitions throughout the world, and not only in the violin, but all instruments. And so we're very, very proud to share what we do in Indianapolis with the rest of the world, because there are many people modeling themselves after us.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, what makes this so special that people are specifically modeling, that they're looking at?
Well, when we set up Indianapolis, there were several things that we really wanted to strive for: creating an atmosphere of a festival as opposed to a competition. Yes, the violinists are coming to compete. There's no question about it. But we wanted them to have the ability to play their pieces in their entirety without being stopped by the judges. We wanted them to feel like every time they were performing, it was in a concert setting as opposed to being in a jury setting where you are playing on stage and then nine people are behind a desk and you're playing for them. Second thing, we wanted to have audiences. We wanted to have education programs. We wanted to do lots of things that create this festival atmosphere. And over the years, these are the things which have become a role model for other countries.
Well, I know that classical music fans here in Indianapolis really look forward to it, as well as the region, because they can come and see so many great concerts. And as you said, each of these the events are done as a concert, not sort of hidden away in some recital hall, right?
That's exactly right. And so what these violinists, we invite 40 violinists to join us for 17 days. And to just give you a little scope of who these 40 violinists are, they were pre-selected from 100 179 applicants from 31 nations. So if you can imagine, those 179 violinists submitted DVDs, which were screened by a screening panel of three concert violinists, including our jury president, Jamie Laredo. They narrowed it down to 40 violinists who will come here and compete through four rounds of competition. So each of them has to prepare over 3 hours of music, if you can imagine that. So we start off with 4 days of preliminaries at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center, and they play a 45-minute program. Everybody plays a 45-minute program. Then we screen those 40 violinists down to 16. If you're lucky enough to get to the round of 16, you play a recital program of 75 minutes, also at the History Center. And if you're lucky enough after that to be screened down to the final six, you have two more rounds you get to play. The first we call our classical finals, and the classical finals are held at the DeHaan Center at the University of Indianapolis, and we are so pleased to be adding a new element to the competition this year, and that is the element of the orchestra. We have invited a conductorless chamber orchestra for the first time in the history of the violin competition. It's called the East Coast Chamber Orchestra.
I know you're pretty excited about this.
I'm pretty excited because the musicianship is extraordinary, the energy is extraordinary, the music making will be absolutely off the charts. And so the violinists will have the opportunity to play with this group, and for many of them, it could be the first time to ever play with a group with no conductor. And so they're going to have to actually lead and show us what they can do with this group. So that's very exciting.
It can be quite a challenge.
It is quite a challenge, and that's the reason we did it, is because it shows us one more dimension about them. You know, we figure we're spending 17 days with them, but we're investing a lifetime career with them post-competition. And so the more we can find out about each of them while they're here, the better judgment that we can make in picking our winner. So that's critical for us. And those same six then will go on to play post-romantic or romantic concerto with the Indianapolis Symphony at Hilbert Circle Theater for two nights. So really, it is a absolutely packed 17 days from morning to evening. And if that wasn't enough, we have invited an outside organization for the first time to hold their annual conference and biannual instrument making competition in Indianapolis. It's called the Violin Society of America.
That's great.
And so they are going to be having their biannual instrument making competition during the week of our finals. They are going to hold their annual conference. They're going to have lectures. They're going to have exhibits. They're going to have everything. So it is truly going to be a week filled with so much to do, from hearing lectures and seeing exhibits to going to concerts. Really, it's a first-time collaboration, and it should be the largest festival of its type in North America for sure.
This is very exciting. I mean, it's so much for your audience members as well as for the contestants. Individual tickets are available for each of the days. Certainly, there's ticket packages available, but you can go to one of the earlier rounds. Tickets are a little bit less expensive. They get a little bit more expensive as it moves to the later rounds, like a tennis competition, if you will, or anything else like that, right?
That's exactly right. But we do keep the prices very low throughout because we realize many people are attending multiple sessions from beginning to end. And so when you add it all up, of course, it can sound like a lot. So for that reason, we have kept the ticket prices down. But you also made a very good point,
even for the finals, you have tickets at $15 if people want.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Great.
And the Hilbert Circle Theater has that capacity to hold up to almost 1,700 people. So and that's why we can offer the $15 tickets. So we definitely want everybody to come out. We also want people to know that if you cannot make every single round, you are welcome to sit right at home and listen in two ways. You can either turn on your computer and listen what we call live or on demand through our website, which is violin.org.
Great website.
Yeah, every single violinist will be. We will be streaming this live, and if you so happen to miss someone, you can go back a few minutes later, and you will be able to hear that person play on demand. And if you don't have a computer, but you have an iPhone or an Android, you can also download our app, and you can actually listen through your handheld device, which is terrific. Technology has really moved light years every year.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's the first year for this, yes, right, that you can do it on
Well,
your phone?
Well, believe it or not, we did it in 2010, but it was only available on iPhones.
Oh, okay.
So now it's multi-platform, and so we're really excited about that. And if you're not a computer person and you don't have a phone, you can actually just turn on the radio and listen on WICR.
Very
all
good.
Rounds of the competition will be broadcast. And so there are
many,
many ways of accessing the competition, and we do hope you'll join us in the easiest way possible.
That's really fantastic that you guys make it so accessible. I mean, this just must be such a phenomenal experience for the contestants. Tell me a little bit about, because you had mentioned, you know, you are making a big investment. The competition is making a big investment in the winner, and it is, I mean, really sort of a lifetime honor and award that carries through their entire career. Tell me a little bit about that in terms of who your winners have been and what that relationship is.
The reason why the violin competition has become so popular today is because violinists around the world recognize that it is one of the few competitions that actually is able to launch a significant career for you. If you go back through our competitions, all the way back to our very first competition, and move forward through our list of winners, you can actually track how each of those winners has done. And they are on the concert stages today performing in the recording studios, making recordings. And so they have had successful careers. Every single one of them, we track what they're doing. The prize package for the gold medalist is enormous. Not only is there a large $30,000 cash prize, one of the most special parts of the prize is that we manage their career for four mm-hmm. years, which means we get them concerts around the world, of which they are paid for. They also get to use Joseph Gingold's 1683 Stradivari violin. That in
wow,
itself
that's pretty cool.
is pretty cool and also unbelievably valuable, because most people cannot afford to even own the violin, let alone use it free
sure.
for 4 years. So this is really something special, because being able to play on something of that quality is, it just changes your whole voice as a violinist. It's beautiful. And then lastly, one of the biggest parts of the prize is that we give you a Carnegie Hall main stage Stern Auditorium debut the year following the competition. So when you add up all these opportunities, mm-hmm. it is a huge beginning to anyone's career. And I say beginning because careers aren't made overnight. They used to be made that way decades ago, but today they take time and they take a lot of nurturing. And so what we can offer these violinists is that exact nurturing and coaching and opportunities. And we hope by giving them all these things, they will have a great start to their career.
Well, it just sounds like a fantastic program. And the of course, the benefits for the winners are tremendous, but even for all the competitors to be able to have this experience, to come here to Indianapolis, to perform, to get the feedback that they get, to be able to perform with these audiences, I mean, it's got to be tremendous for all of them, really.
You're absolutely right. In the old days, if you came to a competition and you played, you literally were playing for the 100 or 500 people in the audience.
Yeah.
Today, with the broadcasts,
people all
you
over are the
world playing are for over tens of thousands of people at
yeah.
any given time. That is mind-blowing when you think about it. And that also makes the stakes much higher, because that means whether you have a good day or a bad day, everybody's listening to you, and it's recorded, and it will be played over and over.
That's
really cool. It can be incredibly helpful to you, and managers can hear you, concert presenters can hear you, violinists, professors, everybody can hear you. And so the visibility is on a level like it's never been before.
Well, you know what? That's also got to be great for the contestants' hometowns, because you do have contestants come from all over the world and from many countries. And I'm sure that they have lots of friends who would love to travel to be able to hear them play and can't do that. But at least they can get the app and hear their friends play and compete, right?
That's the other thing with technology and Google Analytics and all those things. We actually know when someone is playing, and you can see a whole country, literally Germany, who's tuning in on a certain night, or France, or they break it down literally by city, so you can see Philadelphia.
That's so cool.
when Curtis students or Juilliard students are playing in New York. There's a gigantic uptick in those people listening that day. So yes,
really cool.
You're right. It does allow people to follow along who normally wouldn't have the chance to, and the educational back opportunity from listening is really one of a kind.
Well, I need to make sure I get this app. So is it just if I look for violin competition?
That's right.
Okay.
International Violin Competition. You'll be able to download the app for free, and you will be able to follow along in real time with the competition and read about the participants, the jury members, the pianists, and know what's going on at all times.
Awesome. Glenn, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter, and I wish you the best with your upcoming competition.
Thank you for the invitation.
Travis DiNicola with Glenn Kwok, Executive Director of the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis. The 9th Quadrennial Competition runs from September 5th through the 21st, and more information is available at violin.org, violin.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Actors Theater of Indiana has given you the chance to experience a frog, a toad, Pygmalion, Cheetah Rivera, and more. Sharon Gamble invited ATI co-founder Cynthia Collins to explain when she came in to give us this season preview.
All right, so you're starting things off with literally and figuratively a kick with Cheetah, a legendary celebration.
That is correct, Cheetah Rivera. A legendary celebration, I would say, is a perfect title for it. That's how she titles herself, because Cheetah does tour around the country, and we are very, very lucky enough to get her.
And where among, I'm picturing you three founders talking and maybe talking with your business staff and going, we should do something really big.
Well,
how did Cheetah Rivera emerge?
Here's how it happened. Last year, we did Sutton Foster.
Right.
And we presented Sutton, and who's just a wonderful person. She's a doll.
And an amazing entertainer. And
very, very good. And then we just started talking and saying, hey, well, I guess we should continue doing this. This went very well.
Got it.
Let's see who else we can get. So we're racking our brains. Who do you know? Who do you know 1 degree of separation? It's always that way in this business. Everybody kind of knows each other in a, you know, sometimes in a weird way. And Don went to school. Don went to CCM. One of my associates, Don Farrell, went to CCM, and just a guy he went to school with is now Cheetah's agent.
Oh.
Okay. It's just happened.
That's simple.
And we found this out, and Cheetah's agent, who's Don's friend, said, hey, you know, she's touring. She's doing concerts. And so we said, okay, well, let's get it going. And what does she think? Does she want to come to Carmel, to the Palladium? Yes, she does. She is a performer, and she wants to work.
And she's in her 80s.
She's 82. And it's just like everybody in this business, you want to keep working.
Right.
You want to keep doing your craft. She has been a workhorse in the business for, since she came on the scene in the 50s, you know.
So half a century.
Her big thing, of course, was, you know, originating the role of Anita in West Side Story, of course. And she got that because she knew Jerome Robbins, because Jerome Robbins had put her in, I believe it was Call Me Madam. That was her very first national tour of Call Me Madam. And she just was very young. Just went to the audition, you know, and danced her heart out and got the job.
And that's exactly what keeps people keep going to auditions as young people over and over,
that's
over,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And young people should. The thing is with Cheetah, who is to us the royal. She is royalty to us.
Absolutely.
In this business. She is one of the last living legends of the theater. There's not too many left, I have to say.
Yeah.
And she's still going strong. And I have had the pleasure of seeing Cheetah perform before. But I don't get too excited about meeting people. I'm pretty, you know, I've worked with some really great people
yeah.
and been honored to work with some really great people and have always been very appreciative that I've worked with them. And they've all been so super, just super people. But I have to say I'm so excited because I've never met Cheetah, you know, never met her. I know many people have worked with her, you know, guys that I've worked with, her dancers, but I have never met her. So
that's adorable. You know?
So here comes Cheetah, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Cheetah Rivera is going to be here. So it's going to be a
kick. You are like a little kid at Christmas.
No, it's going to be a kick for us. So so we're very excited about it. And she's a very, listen, she's a very gracious, wonderful person.
I was going to ask if we know if she's kind of down to earth.
She is, because I know people who've worked closely with her.
And she has reason that she could put on airs. I mean, she started in ballet.
Yes,
and,
of course,
with a
strict ballet.
Ballet scholarship.
Oh, yes, she got a scholarship
kind
and
of
came
moved
to New York.
Over. Yeah.
And then got that national tour and just kept going. But
Sweet Charity, Chicago, Kiss
oh
of the
God.
Spider Woman, Bye Bye Birdie,
The
Rink.
Yeah.
Just what a pedigree.
And the thing is, you know, with her, she almost should be, you would think a person like that almost should be working even more. I think this about some of the people in the business, how they even should be. This is how hard the business is. Even people like Cheetah Rivera should be working more. You know, Patti LuPone, Bernadette mm-hmm. Peters. Mm-hmm. You know, these people work, but it's hard for everyone. It's still a difficult business for everyone.
And people get pushed aside for the shiny new thing, whether that
sure they do.
New thing is a brand new performer or
that happens everywhere.
Yeah,
but. You know, kids, the young people should know about Cheetah Rivera, and a lot of them don't. And even young kids in theater programs now, I don't think, are aware of how amazing she is.
And I'm not sure I'm sure she's been to Indianapolis, but I don't think it's been recently.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't even know. Yeah, I couldn't even say, you know, if she's ever performed with the ISO or any that. I really have no idea. But I'm glad she's going to be here
That's
in September.
Right. That's right. And you're bringing her. Good job.
That's right.
Good job. And then you're actually starting. I love the theme of your season, Broadway in Your Backyard.
Right.
That's really sweet and cute.
Yes. I can't take credit for it, but I like it.
So you're starting with a show that has been described as the perfect musical.
I think it's pretty darn close to perfect. My Fair Lady, of course, written by Lerner and Lowe. Of course, Pygmalion, taken mm-hmm. from Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw. And it's actually one of my favorite musicals. I did the European tour of it. And I also did an extremely extensive run of it in New York, up in Westchester.
What do you
Westchester
like about
Broadway.
It? What do you like about
I
it?
I think it's put together so well. Alan J. Lerner, when he took Pygmalion, and it's almost verbatim. The musical, if you look at both scripts.
Really?
If you look at Pygmalion, and then you look at My Fair Lady, he did not change a lot.
Hmm.
He changed two scenes completely.
Mm-hmm.
And added music.
Hmm.
So he took it, he adapted it. Then, of course, Lerner and Lowe, you know, there they were composing it and doing the lyrics. What a team, anyway. They had a fantastic knack of really, really taking the dialogue and this from the dialogue and moving it into the song beautifully,
mm-hmm.
which is what is a song is a monologue with music, a duet is dialogue with music. So they were probably, I'd have to say, I can't say they were the best team to do that because there's many composers and lyricists that
sure.
are fantastic, but they were right up there in the top like three of really making that transition from dialogue straight into the music, smooth transitions, and really making it Well, obviously, they wrote that music, and here's the original Rex Harrison, who's not a singer at all.
Right.
And that's how it all came about, that Higgins is not going to really sing. He's going to sing-songing it.
Right.
He's going to talk-sing it. And then that was it after Rex Harrison did it. Nobody else sang Professor Higgins' song. And really, and I've seen it done where he sings a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. You know, it's all right if he sings a little bit. But it's never, ever done with him singing. It's not right. It doesn't. It wouldn't make sense.
And for those who maybe don't know the show at all, it's still a surprise when you're sitting there and someone starts a line and suddenly they're singing.
Right, because it just transitions so fantastically, you know. And the music is just. I can't describe it any other way. That it's just so. It's this monumental music too. It's big. It's grand, and it's also. Just so it can be so intimate.
Yeah.
Some of it.
It's really it's an interesting love story, too.
Yeah, which they put in.
It's not as straight ahead.
Know,
it's
right,
not as
right.
It's not as ingenue as a lot of musicals, especially from that era.
No, and what a tour de force for the actress playing Eliza Doolittle.
Yeah.
It's, of course, every actress wants to play Eliza Doolittle if they're right in their life. We have a wonderful girl actually playing it from Chicago, Erin Orschel. And the Higgins is a good friend of mine, Doug Trapp, coming in from New York to play Professor Higgins. And Doug has extensive credits. He's wonderful. And then the rest of the cast is local. So the rest of the cast is right here from Central Indiana and from Indianapolis.
And your director's local.
And Richard Roberts from the IRT is directing it. And Richard is pretty brilliant. He's directed for us before. And he is directing My Fair Lady and 39 Steps for us this season.
Congratulations on getting 39 Steps. That's going to be a coup.
I know. We're excited about that, too.
Before we talk about that, I want to talk a little bit about a show that maybe some people might not know, which is Pete and Keeley, your November show.
That's true. Pete and Keeley played off Broadway, and it's a wonderful show, very tongue-in-cheek, very funny. It's about a couple, Pete Bartel, Keeley Stevens. Kind of like Stephen Eady, you know, the kind of Stephen Eady meets, like, he's a little Robert Goulet. She can also be a little bit of a Connie Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
They're a mix of those people. And they're doing, it's 1968, and they're doing, of course, their television comeback special.
And they're divorced by this
point, right?
And
they are divorced. Yeah. So they have not worked together in quite some time.
So they have to look like this
to
love each other.
Exactly. They put on all the airs, and then you see the off-camera action of what goes on. And it's the Pete and Keeley comeback special sponsored by Swell Shampoo. So, of course, you have all the commercials that are reminiscent of the old commercials from that time.
Sure.
You know, when everybody did their special, used to do those specials.
And
the variety shows.
You're right.
You know, that are unfortunately dead now. That era has passed. But it's a riot. It's hysterical. I mean, when I saw it, and I knew the original, the actor who originated the role of Pete Bartel, George Dvorsky. I had worked with George. So I went to see the show, and he was great. And Sally Mays originated the role of Keeley. They were wonderful. It's just a two-person show. It's them and, like, it's like you're in the studio. Of course,
you're the studio audience, of course,
and you're watching the behind the scenes, and you're seeing the crew set the stage.
You're going to have one night when people are invited to dress in '60s attire to really make it environmental.
I'll have to tell our marketing director, Kristen Merritt, about that, who's sitting right next to me but not speaking. Yes. Yeah, that would be fun.
And now for something completely different. Then, in January and February, 39 Steps. Oh, my gosh. You couldn't get more different.
I think we have just touching on that, we have a great variety this season. I think we have a wonderful variety. And I think there's something for everyone. And this piece, The 39 Steps, is, of course, taken from the Alfred Hitchcock movie. But again, it's a complete takeoff of it. Where it's just four people in the show,
mm-hmm.
and there are two men, and they're known as Clown 1 and Clown 2, and they each play about 32 roles.
Oh, my.
So that's the base of the show.
Wow.
That's what makes the show not hysterical and interesting
yeah.
and so unique.
And, you know, and something that an actor would just be an all actor over would just himself to do.
Gotta dig their teeth into it, right?
Yeah.
And so again, Richard Roberts is directing that one, and it's really, and they have interspersed in the show little Hitchcock. They'll throw a little piece of the from the Birds in there,
like
North
little
by
references.
Northwest.
Got
little, and they have this actually this whole section of that gives a little montage and a little honorarium to his movies, which is hysterical.
Oh,
and but it's so brilliant. I mean, it's just the guy. These men are changing characters.
Yeah.
In 2 seconds, a hat here, a hat, you know, what you say, Governor? I don't know. You know, a hat comes off, a hat goes on, a cape, a scarf, and they're different people.
Yeah.
It's really a real pleasure for an actor to
do these. So even if you don't care about Hitchcock, just going to see the acting chops,
it doesn't even matter.
Be, yeah.
It's so well written.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I guess I saw its closing week on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I just went gaga over it. You know, I mean, the two men who played the clowns were brilliant.
Mm.
So so we have a good cast for that one, too. That is actually that's actually cast as well.
Don't tell us.
I won't. I wouldn't dare. So but it's yes.
And we have just enough time to mention that you're wrapping up the season with a little nod to kitsch. Is that fair to say?
Gosh. Talk about kitsch. I think it's the kitschiest thing we're doing in the whole season. Xanadu. And if anybody knows the movie, gosh, that movie that came out with Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly,
mm-hmm.
the movie wasn't a big smash. So what they've done with the musical,
mm-hmm.
and this was a big hit, actually, on Broadway, did very well. They totally, almost spoof it, but in a loving way.
Uh-huh.
So there's nothing mean. There's no malice. It's hysterical. And all that music from Olivia Newton-John and Electric Light Orchestra is in it. And you have that fun. Talk about such fun music and just a fun show where that's the show you just go and you don't think. That's a non-thinking show.
This is for those people who are like, I've seen Mamma Mia enough. What's the next show I need to see? Right?
Yeah. I think it is. Yeah. You can compare it to that if people want to compare it to something. It's that fun. You don't even have to think. Just go and have a good time show. Where, My Fair Lady, you have to think.
Yeah.
You have to. Pete and Keeley is also the fun, kind of fun, goofy, but 39 Steps, you better pay attention because you're going to be lost in the first 5 minutes. You better, and I don't mean that to deter people, but pay attention because there's a lot going on that stage. But yeah, Xanadu is just fun, and I'm actually going to be in that one. I will get, and Judy Fitzgerald. The other co-founder, we're going to be in that one.
Terrific.
And we can't wait because we are just dying to do the show. and run around and sing, I'm Alive and oh my gosh, this is great music. It's our child. It's our youth.
Sharon Gamble with Actors Theater of Indiana co-founder Cynthia Collins. My Fair Lady opens September 12th, and you can see Cheetah Rivera September 25th for tickets. And for more information, check out actorstheaterofindiana.org. Again, that's actorstheaterofindiana.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what this weekend is?
Last Week in a Fringe.
It is indeed, and we'll tell you more about that on our calendar. We call
What
Will
We do?
But we have to do it fast.
So much to do.
So much to do.
Yes, I'm having a great time at Fringe.
As a performer and as an audience member.
I am, but I have to leave town, so I'm not in Jacked anymore, but Jim Poyser has taken over for me, and he's going to do a great job.
And
no doubt about that.
I've never seen the two of you in the same room together, so I'm just saying.
You never know. Hey, just a quick review. If you get a chance, Secret Circus is a lot of fun. It's sort of like James Bond meets Cirque du Soleil meets the Pink Panther.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a beautiful, moving storytelling play is mm-hmm. called The Actual Dance, which is about love and sickness. It's actually about that part of your vows where you vow to be with somebody in sickness and in health.
Nice.
It's got some humor and some sex in it. Just saying.
Oh, wow. There's all the Fringe goes through Sunday. There's plenty of time to see lots of good Fringe
shows. Go to indiefringe.org, or I warn you now, if you're strolling on Mass Ave or nearby, performers will hand you their postcards.
They will find you.
Hey, what else is going on this weekend?
Well, actually, planning for next week, at the zoo on Thursday night, Naturally Inspired, the Silent Auction and Artist Reception. And this is a fundraiser for the zoo, and there's going to be a lot of art based on the animals at the zoo that you can bid on. If you're a member, the tickets are even a lot less. But you do need to make a reservation. You can give the zoo a call or go onto their website and check it out.
I don't know if our zoo has any animals who are native to Greece or not, but if they are, they should be excited about Greek Fest, which is this very weekend at Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, 3500 West 106th Street. We love Greek Fest. Opa! Lots of good things to eat and look at, and
music and dance.
And admire the church itself, indeed. More information at indiegreekfest.org.
Love Greek Fest.
Indeed.
Hey, start making your plans for Labor Day weekend, and that might just include Warm Fest, which is the big concert that's featuring a whole bunch of cool bands starting on Friday the 29th and going through Labor Day. There's going to be Zero Boy, Steady Flow, Coolidge, and it goes on and on and on, including Of Montreal and Big Head Todd and the Monsters. And it's just going to be a lot of fun, and it is up in Broad Ripple, and that is Warm Fest on Labor Day weekend.
Speaking of Broad Ripple, there's something you can do there this weekend. The White River Yacht Club, which is a private club on the White River just north of Broad Ripple. It's been there for more than 75 years, and it's having an open house, free and open to the public, and a festival this Saturday from noon to 11. You can hear live music, shop arts and crafts vendors. There'll be kids activities, live and silent auctions, door prizes, food booths, and cash bars. So put some money in your pocket. The Aberdeen Project Band will perform from 8 to 11 p.m. And they're just trying to get more people familiar with what they do and their groovy venue. So that's this Saturday, noon to 11 at the White River Yacht Club.
And we'll be back next week for the calendar we call.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
To celebrate its 10th anniversary, the arts organization Big Car is having an exhibition, of course. Called The Department of Yes, 10 Years of Big Car Collaborative in Indianapolis, it runs from August 25th through September 26th at UIndy's Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center Gallery. Travis DiNicola spoke with Big Car's founder and director, Jim Walker, and the exhibit curator, Mark Rushman, about the show.
Tell me about Big Car and how you guys got started and what your goal is here.
When we started in 2004, we were kind of thinking a lot smaller. We were all volunteer, and we were in the Murphy Art Center at that point. And so Fountain Square was really our focus. It was a lot different down there. And that's when I first started working with Mark, was really on bringing First Fridays to Fountain Square. At the time we moved down there, it was really the beginning of IDOTA getting First Friday rolling. And First Friday wasn't really on the map for as a destination. It was really focused Mass Avenue and primarily over there. You know, Mark had his gallery then, and so
Fountain Square has changed dramatically in the past 5 years. But 10 years ago, it was certainly a little bit quieter down there.
Yeah, and we had the run of the Murphy Art Center. Phil Campbell was really nice to us. He owned the building at the time, and so we learned a lot right off the bat. We didn't know what we were doing, and a lot of us had just kind of, none of us had ever run a gallery before or a nonprofit. It was a lot of artists and writers and musicians just trying to really do something different in our city and bring some things here that we wanted to have happening.
And the name really came from an idea of it being a big enough car for everyone to fit in, right? That's the anecdote I've heard.
That's kind of the apocryphal story. Way we explain it. And it was also, I think we just thought it was funny too, because everything was so small. And the place we really started in before Phil like upgraded us to a regular studio space was in what had been a bathroom. So we had this tiny little room, and we just sort of started taking over the hallways because we needed more room to show artwork, and had started having we had a show or two out in the hallway. And then he was like, maybe you guys need to just move into a bigger space instead of taking over the hallway. And then we moved into that space and then took over more hallways and more spaces, and just had a good time doing all that.
And then eventually moved out to the service center and now have a new home, right?
Yeah, we're opening two new spaces out on the west side, very close to where service center was located. And then expand. We have another space that's out on the far east side out at 38th and Mithoffer that's in a Superior Mercado in a grocery store.
Okay.
And, you know, and we're doing kind of programming all around the city. And a lot of that will be explained in the show that we're doing at UND.
Yeah. So 10 years. So how did it come about, Mark, that the UND connection here and having a show about big cars history at UND?
Well, Jim was already familiar with UND, and he had done some things down, I think, at the Ruth Lilly Performance Hall. And I'm the gallery coordinator there on top of my duties at the Indiana State Museum. But I think you actually searched me out. You knew I was the coordinator of the gallery, and you were looking for a venue to do this event. And it really fit well with what Big Car does, because we have the gallery space, about 1,500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have the Ruth Lilly Hall, where he can where Big Car can put on some of the performance pieces they've done over the years. So it was a really good fit, I think, for them. And then for us, it gives us an opportunity to expose our students to the wonderful work that Big Car does. And then also it brings attention to the University of Indianapolis. There'll be people coming there from all over the city. It'll give them a chance to see a wonderful exhibition, enjoy some performances, and learn learn both about Big Car and the university.
So how did the two of you work together in choosing what was included? I mean, Big Car has done so much and sort of all over the place with everything from, you know, community building, a mural project, to facilitating the 48-hour film festival, to concerts, to, you know, camping, to chickens, to, I mean, where do you, you know, how did you two pick, like, what is going to represent 10 years of Big Car?
Well, actually, I'll defer to Jim on that. I've been a big fan of theirs. I've attended many of their events. But when it came time to really select what was going to go into the exhibition, I left it up to to Jim to make those – Jim and his team to make those decisions. So I'll let him answer that question.
Yeah. So, you know, there are minimalists and then there are maximalists. And I think we're more in the maximalist side of things. And that's a real word. I really like it. And so we're – just going to have everything in the show
that you can fit.
Yeah, pretty much. So we broke it down into 10 different categories. Things like the gallery itself when it was around, service center, project we did called Made for Each Other that reached a lot of neighborhoods around the city.
Yeah.
Category like called that we're referring to as idea sharing. So things like the TEDx conference that we do,
sure.
Or that we help do the, you know, things we've been involved in, like Pachachka, you know, was in the Big Car gallery space, an opportunity for people to share their ideas in the 5x5 arts idea competitions. So we kind of created these different categories, and one of the categories is the future, where we just kind of highlight what's coming up, and we made a new video that kind of explains all the different spaces and projects that we're working on and what we're really excited about. So there are 10 different stations in there that are kind of really fitting to what Big Car does, where they're built out of wood and there are photos in them and you can kind of interact with them, spin them around and look at them and read about what's on the pictures. And then a lot of video, a video monitor for each of the 10 topic areas about Big Car, and then artifacts that we've kind of saved and put up around there that we just had to sort of dig through all our stuff and find. And then one of the things that we're super excited about is all of those things are going to have connected stations in the middle of the space. It's a really nice big square shaped room.
Mm-hmm.
And in those middle stations, people will be able to interact. So like one of the things we did in the gallery was we asked people what they thought Bigfoot looked like, and then they could just draw Bigfoot. And then we added their Bigfoot drawing to the other Bigfoot drawings. Then we ended up with more than 500 different drawings of Bigfoot by kids and adults and artists and non-artists. And so that'll be something you can do in the gallery again. So we're just going to bring out some of those activities, that things that we did at TEDx, things We've done in other settings, opportunities for people to move around, mm-hmm. Participate and be part of the exhibit, and that'll be in the middle of the gallery space.
And again, so this exhibit is going to be going on from August 25th through the 26th. The big reception night is taking place on September 10th. Tell me a little bit about that night.
Yeah, the night of September 10th, we'll have the opening celebration for the space, the show in the space. And then right next to, one of the things we really like about the gallery is right next to it is a really lovely recital hall, that's perfect for the kind of classical musicians and other musicians who are in school at UND and perform at UND. And we're going to do something that might not be so typical for the stage in there and have mm-hmm. sort of a variety show of the different kind of experimental music, poetry, cross-genre things. For instance, one of the friends of ours who's a part of Big Car, Kevin McKelvey, is a poetry professor, a writing professor at UND, and he's going to read a poem and have an electronic musician play music with him while he's... doing that. We're pairing him up with Nathan Monk, who's a electronic musician and an artist that's been part of things. And so these, that's been what Big Car is about all along. It's like crossing genres, mixing up music and poetry and writing and art all in the same space, because I really think there's a lot more power to that. And it's been a way to be really successful in drawing in an audience and
well, I love the name of the exhibit, the Department of Yes. I mean, so much of what you guys do is, I see the work that you do, Jim, and whether it's taking on some, sort of local project that comes out from grassroots or connecting to something, that's got sort of a national reputation and bringing it here to Indy, like 48 Hour Film or TEDx, but you guys are always like, yes, sure, why not?
Right.
Let's do that, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys ever say no?
We've tried to figure out a way to be nice and say no, and that's by focusing a little bit on where mm-hmm. we do our work. So one of the other good connections with UIndy is one of the areas that we focus on is the South Side. So from Fountain Square down to UIndy
yeah.
is an area of emphasis for us, and then the Far East Side out where we have that gallery at 38th and Mitthoffer, and then Lafayette Square. So sometimes we'll do things other places. We do a lot of work downtown too. So kind of trying to contain it to those areas, and then if we have an opportunity somewhere else, probably can say no if we're too busy with the other places.
Right. Mark, this has got to be a fun show for you to say yes to.
It was easy.
And what a great way to kick off the fall semester, right, for the students there, and to see, this retrospective of Big Car. But I'm sure you enjoyed working on this as well, though.
It's been quite an experience, and I'm looking forward to the opening night and then the run of the show because, for all the reasons that Jim has just talked about, I think the students are going to really enjoy it, and they're going to learn a lot from it. They're going to see a variety of experiences and art forms, and it'll open their eyes a bit too, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's exciting too is that there's a class related to the exhibit.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and they... I'm teaching that class, so I'll have a small class of students who will be helping with the interactive stuff and being in there to help other students, like to kind of facilitate what's going on, so they'll kind of get immersed in the Big Car sort of experience through and get credit for it too.
So Jim, I mean, as you went back sort of through your archives or your shoeboxes or whatever it may be, to sort of, go through this all, was there anything that really kind of surprised you, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that, or maybe some pattern that sort of showed up as you were looking at things in retrospect?
I think that the blending and the crossing genres is really the thing that I thought was the most interesting, and just seeing how different people have participated in different ways, like somebody like Kevin, who's a professor by day, also like did this kind of movement thing once in an event we did that was kind of experimental music and movement at the IMA. And so there, Kevin will be in the show in this video, and then there are musicians who also made art, and I just think it just shows that creativity kind of crosses all these different borders. And I think that's a really great thing for students to learn and for everybody to learn, that, that it's all really about the idea and and sparking like creative experiences that are fun for people to be part of.
Excellent. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing the show at UND. Mark, before we let you guys go, I want to ask you real quick, because I know you got some other great visual art exhibits that are coming up at University of Indianapolis throughout the year, specifically the Ed Funk exhibit that that immediately follows the Big Car Department of Yes show.
Yeah, Ed Funk was a local artist. Most people knew him best as the owner of Dolphin Paper, and he was also in the Murphy Building for many years. And Ed sadly passed away at the beginning of the year, and we actually I was talking with Ed prior to his passing about doing an exhibition at UIndy, so it was already in the works. But this will be something of a retrospective of his paintings and prints, and it'll pay tribute to a really wonderful person, a good friend, and it's been a big loss for the whole community. So that exhibition will open up on October 6th and go through the 31st, and that'll be followed by the faculty exhibition. We do six exhibitions during the course of the year, and we try and mix it up with local, mm-hmm. regional, nationally known artists. And again, we couldn't be more thrilled with kicking off the season with the Big Car exhibition.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, Mark, I want to thank you both for coming into Art of the Matter today. And Jim, congratulations again on 10 years of Big Car.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicolo with Big Car's Jim Walker and curator Mark Rushman. The show, The Department of Yes, 10 Years of Big Car Collaborative in Indianapolis, runs from August 25th through September 26th at UIndy's Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center's gallery, with a reception on September 10th from 4 to 8 p.m. More information can be found at uindy.edu/arts. Again, uindy.edu/arts.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out what's coming up this season for the Hendrix Symphonic Society.
I'll get a preview of this year's Indy Sister Cities Fest.
And I'll find out why a band called Matthew Street is playing at the Phoenix Theater. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.